dream is prophecy. Prophecy is a guess that comes true. When it doesn't, it's a metaphor. You could put a gun to your head tomorrow and pull the trigger, and then the dream is just a dream. And the prophecy is just a metaphor. And so are you.
Now, Molari, now we end this.
Whether it was a total stranger or your worst enemy, you were a witness! It doesn't matter if they'd stop! It doesn't matter if they'd listen! You had an obligation to speak out! You're not sorry for what you did! You're just sorry that you got caught!
I'm sorry, Shigar.
As Mr. Garibaldi would say, it's been one hell of a day.
Yes, a hell of a day.
And a hell of a year.
A hell of a 5 years.
Hell of a life.
You win.
Londo's cruel past could cost him his life.
Now we end this.
No!
Watch an all-new Babylon 5. Next Wednesday at 10, exclusively on TNT.
You have transmissions holding.
Batch incoming signal. Full audio and video decode.
Purple files accessed.
What you are about to see has never been shown to anyone outside the Break House.
Out there in podcast land, welcome to Gray 17, a Babylon 5 podcast, a part of the Front Row Network and NPR Illinois Community Voices. We're a group of newbies watching Babylon 5 for the very first time, and a group of first ones who have watched a Babylon 5 far too many times. And we're here for the second episode of the final season, and that is The Very Long Night of Londo Molari. I'm Scott, and with me is...
Blake.
Jesse.
Emily.
Nicole.
Mike.
Justin.
So anyway, if birds are real, then where do they go at night? That's all I'm going to say.
Stop it! Okay,
don't believe the lie.
To jump the tracks already. It's already done. Episode,
fuck it.
But I actually saw a really good meme about simulation theory, where we live in a simulation. And it's like, prove it. Have you ever seen your neighbors taking groceries? And I had to sit there and think about it for a second and go, have I ever actually watched my neighbors take in their groceries?
You nosy motherfuckers. Yes, I have.
I have one neighbor who is like, you know, can't walk. So I take his groceries.
Well, that's just part of the programming, Scott.
Okay, fine.
Right.
Well, was it Plutarch's Cave?
The Truman Show. I mean,
whose cave was it in Roman times? Or it was the we're all simulations in one person's head. We just don't know which one it is.
Oh.
This is usually happening at the end of the show. I don't know if I'm ready for this today.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Can we?
Okay. Before we get talking about Londo's peni, we're going to remind you all again to check out all of our social media links down below. We are active on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as if you want to join our Discord, you can join our Patreon. All members of our Patreon do get access to our Discord. A special thanks to our Gray Council members, those listed down below as producers who provide the biggest donation every single month. We really do appreciate it. And we are still running the contest. I know I'd finish it May 1, but I'm going to run it a few more weeks. And that is, we have two very old CD-ROMs from the 90s that are Babylon 5 related. And I'm going to give one out to somebody who is subscribed to our YouTube channel, and another one out to somebody who has given us a review. So if you haven't gone to Apple and given us a review yet, or subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do that, and we will be announcing the winner in a couple weeks.
And Scott, if Rick just happens to win the review award, we're
sending
a bag of sparkly dicks with it, just for pleasure.
A glitter bomb.
And thank you for those of you who've already left Apple reviews. We got another one in, and Blake tipped me off to this one, and it's a fun one. It's a 5-star. This comes from Patrick O, 1980, and it is a very boffable podcast. We're very boffable, guys.
I knew that.
Fuckable. What does that mean?
It means that we can be fucked.
We're fuckable. We're fuckable.
Remember, Anonymous said she could have at least boffed Marcus at least once.
Okay.
We're boffable.
Yeah, we're all fuckable. Okay.
So it goes.
Y'all, I ain't got energy for that shit.
Not that boofable, which is what our Supreme Court justice does.
Oh.
But a bump.
Bow.
It goes from Patrick O, 1980. I love Babylon 5. I'm the kind of guy that clenches his fists whenever someone says DS9 is a better sci-fi series. It is. And I can say this podcast does the series justice. Love it. So much fun hearing the newbies' takes on things and perspectives of first ones. Reminds me of being back in school in the 90s, chatting with my friends, trying to figure out what's going on and what's next. I listen every week without fail. Thanks, Patrick. Not sure who you're going to boff first, but let us know.
What's going on?
Nose goes.
Nose goes. Sorry, Patrick. Jesse put her nose up first. I apologize. You're getting Nicole.
Oh, like that's a bad thing. Way to insult me, Scott.
Wow. That's what they called in the old game shows the booby prize.
I
right?
am no cut rate, Jesse. I'm my own person.
I was going to say Justin was your prize.
Oh, was Justin the last to go? Okay, we get to...
I'm a treasure.
Patrick, Justin will be mailed to you at the earliest possible convenience.
God damn it.
I don't need air holes. I found out I can hold my breath for quite a long time.
Jesus Christ.
And where did you pick up this knowledge, Justin?
Don't.
Abort. Abort.
You're off,
no,
man.
That's not legal in Indiana now. Go ahead, Justin.
Oh, my God.
Do a barrel roll.
Well, Blake, in 2008. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, no.
Coffin role play? What?
No, that was a Star Fox reference. Okay, moving on.
Patrick, thanks. We appreciate it.
Dude, we're not even like 10 minutes into this fucking show.
Oh. I feel good about myself right now. I don't know about y'all.
Apparently, season 5, all of our filters are just completely.
We have given all the shits.
Do we even give a shit about the show at this point?
Well, all of us but Emily gives a shit about the show.
I don't. I do.
We know. And the fans do too, Emily.
We've known that for a season and a half. We're good.
Oh, by the way,
Babylon 5, right?
Well, and speaking of the fans, Jesse, we did get informed on our Twitter account that you need to take your meds.
Didn't take meds, fuckers. What was that supposed to mean?
I think they said you were a little spicy last week. You came in hot.
Oh, well, you know what? That's me, guys. It's 5 seasons fucking later. If you don't know that right now, you've missed something. Something has gone awry. I like myself. I don't know.
I don't know Jesse any other way.
I know. I
just love when she introduces herself as a fucking delight.
It's like fucking 80 fucking episodes to figure out that I'm a fucking asshole. I don't know what we're doing.
So, speaking of things that won't derail us, let's talk about Londo's dicks. Okay, we're here today to talk about The Very Long Night of Londo Mollari, and I believe Jesse has a synopsis for us.
I do. Londo suffers a serious heart attack and must face his greatest fear to survive. Lanier averts an HR nightmare by leaving to go train as a ranger. He informs us that 3 is a crowd. I always thought it was a party, but we're moving on.
Sheridan's not ready for that yet. He's still doing missionary. He's not ready for threesomes.
And again, we had to see them in bed. I fucking had enough.
This is true.
Do you think that they just do the BYU version of soaking over in Babylon 5?
Oh.
I don't know what that is, and I'm glad I don't.
No.
Oh, boy.
No. Nicole, ignore. Ignore what we're about to say, because you, like, just like I told Kevin, act like we never had this conversation and move on.
Okay, then.
Or.
Soaking is.
Or. Hear me out. Or.
Jesse, would you like to describe soaking for us?
Okay, soaking is there we go. What the, not the Mormons, the Amish do, because they're not supposed to be having sex.
So, Mormons do it too.
It's actually the Mormons.
Yeah.
No, but it's also the Amish. So okay, well, that's how I found out about it.
Works. Hang on.
So there
are all our listeners in Utah. Hi.
What was his name?
Moving on. So they like insert said penis into said vagina, but don't move. Like it's called soaking.
Oh, they just let it sit there? Ew.
And somebody jumps on a bed so that they
can, oh, you know,
because
my
it's because
God.
It's not considered sex if they're not thrusting, but you can pay somebody to jiggle you around and
shake the bed around.
Yeah.
You are making this up.
There's no, we're not. Not.
It's legit.
100% not making it up.
You know, listen, what?
People will do all kinds of crazy shit to try to like claim a technicality so they can commit sin.
All about the loopholes.
There is a life hack for everything, apparently.
Yeah. But and the Mormons the found Mormons. A life hack for virginity.
Well, that's like the Catholics. If you do it in the butt, it doesn't count. I mean, that's what they always said in high school.
Jesus Christ.
Well, at least furries are still fake. Okay.
No, furries are real too.
They're not.
No, I know.
Boxes in the high schools. Didn't you know that?
Furries and adult baby diaper lovers. You're welcome, Kevin. Ew. If you'd like to look back.
No, on the adult baby stuff, but furries are fine.
So for the five listeners who are still with us, you're sick fucks, and let's keep going, okay?
I'm traumatized, okay.
Ones who are still with us, you're our kind of people. Okay.
Done first impressions yet.
Yeah, no, we haven't. So let's get our first impressions on the very long night of Londo Mollari. Emily, how much do you hate Babylon 5?
I've pretty much forgotten most of this episode other than Sheridan is looking like a smarmy politician. And I dislike him even more now. I'm actually going to be really sad if Lanier leaves. I like him. I hope he doesn't actually go, but he might. I don't know. I hope not, because that would suck. We'd be down another good character.
They're all leaving.
All the Rangers just out the window. They're all gone one by one. Nicole, first impressions.
Well, no one told me this episode was going to make me cry, first off. I liked this episode. I thought it was really good. It was very deep, very emotional. It was kind of a heavier episode from what we've been having lately, I think. Interesting to know about the Centauris having two hearts that kind of work like kidneys. That was kind of cool. Obviously, the Minbari are into threesomes. We learned that. So, hey, that's kind of interesting.
Did we really?
I mean, yeah.
Did we not?
Yeah. Delenn, as a fortune teller, by the way, is creepy. She was really kind of scary. But like, cool. Shirley Temples. I want to know where that temple is. I'd like to go there too with Lanier. That made me laugh, that whole scene. And then the Zocalo looked really cool when it was empty. Like when Londo was in there in the dream sequence and it was empty, it looked fucking cool. I was like, how have I not noticed the Zocalo was redone all these seasons later? Those are just a couple weird things I pointed out. But overall, I really thought this was a good episode. I hope Lanier does come and go and he's not gone, because that was, you know... that would be sad, but yeah, overall, I thought this was a good episode. I thought it was kind of like a long time coming with the Londo and Jakar plotline. So,
Justin.
I mean, actually, I'm with Nicole. I love this episode. I mean, capital L-U-V-D. It's a very profound episode. So much metaphor and symbology with the bar scene with Sheridan, the confrontation with Jakar. There was so much references to where I was sitting there writing down in my notes, like, you know, watching Sheridan walk through, and every time it goes back to Sheridan, he's in a different uniform. It's showing like the stages of Sheridan's life as he's going through talking to Londo during that episode. I too am sad to see Lanier leaving, but I completely understand his reasons. I mean, it makes sense to me. Two things that really caught my attention in this episode is the powerful display from Jakar about the obligation to speak out even when no one else will listen. That really got to me. You know, you said nothing. You said nothing. You know, and just kept repeating it over and over. And then I think my favorite quote from this entire series was in this episode. Prophecy is a guess that comes true. If it doesn't, it's metaphor. Absolutely loved it. Londo saying sorry to Jakar at the end of the episode when he wakes up did bring kind of a little bit of the lump in the throat to me. And lastly, I still don't like the opening credits.
Whatever. There's no helping you, Justin. I don't know.
Oh, many doctors have tried, my friend. No one has succeeded.
I love that. I think the open credits that you hate are the ones I like the most. It's great.
Vice versa. I love season 3 and season 4's opening credits. Those are my favorite.
Jesse, first impression.
I still miss Ivanova deeply. I actually really enjoyed this episode. I fucking love Londo and Jakar together. And that's all it was the whole episode. It was amazing. I love to see those two. I love to see them on screen as much as possible. I have zero expectations for season 5 whatsoever. Like episode 1 just really kind of fucking pissed in my cornflakes early. And I just don't believe that it's going to be great. But the second episode really surprised the shit out of me. So I enjoyed it a lot.
And we'll go over to our first ones who have watched the whole show. We'll go to Mike, first impression.
Well, sorry to be an outlier here. I'm not going to say that I didn't like the episode. I just found myself having a hard time engaging with it. I always enjoy seeing more Londo screen time, but I don't know. His storyline in this one didn't have that big of an impact on me, I guess, and I couldn't really tell you why. Kind of the same with Lanier. I just didn't really care that much about it. I feel like overall it's kind of just a very middling episode in my book. I don't know.
Kevin.
I'm with Mike. I thought it was kind of a middling episode too. I just wasn't really compelled by anything in particular with it other than the stuff with Jakar. In particular, I did kind of like that, but I don't know. Yeah, middling episode, wasn't wowed by it. Would not probably rewatch it on a rewatch unless I was doing more than a cursory one. So
Blake,
wow,
yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this because what I want to say I can't say. But
be good, Blake.
Thank you. What I will say is, as a longtime fan of this show, there are still times when you watch these episodes and you find things you miss, even after umpteen rewatches. And for me, there are bits and pieces of that in this episode. And I like what it does. I like the story that it tells and the way it does it. So I'm actually a fan of this episode. This is probably one of my favorite ones in season 5, actually. And I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked, especially that the half of our first ones aren't a big fan, because I think this is a great Jakar Londo episode. I think it does a lot. And it also reminds me how much we haven't had Jakar Londo and Vir Lanier a lot in season 4. It was very earthling centric for obvious reasons. So the fact that we get to have an episode where, unless you're seeing Sheridan in your dreams, this isn't an episode about anyone but our alien friends. And I really do like that. I also love that we get the Vir and Lanier show again. I wish we would have seen every meeting, because remember we heard a long time ago that they meet every week to just do that. I want to see that every week. I want that to be the end credit scene for every single episode, because I love those two so much. And I love the fact that, and I've been waiting for this episode for a long time, because we've had so many conversations on, is Londo redeemed? Is he not? And Jakar called it out. You were only sorry because you got caught.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've been waiting for you all to hear for 5 seasons, because that's what I've been wanting you all to discuss with us too, is now that Londo has realized that his apologies were bullshit, and now we may have finally seen an apology that matters, I want to hear from all you all on what your opinion of Londo is now. So I'm looking forward to that. So let's go ahead and dive in. But first, let's talk Lanier and get that out of the way, and then we'll dive into Londo's long night. So who wants to start?
I'll go. Okay. It kind of caught me off guard, because we've known that Lanier was in love with her for a while. We've had these conversations. We've talked about it. I think we even had an argument about it at one point about whether she knew or not. So the fact that he's like, yo, 3's a crowd. And my brain literally went, and I know I said it earlier, I was joking, but I literally was like, hey, that's a party. But like, the fact that he's up and leaving, it really caught me off guard. And am I the only one that felt like the very last scene where Sheridan walks in and Delenn's still watching, I kind of felt like she was like maybe rethinking if she had made the right decision or not. Like, she kind of looked like this is who I chose. Like, so it kind of was interesting to me, and I enjoyed the plot.
She did give up the bigger bone. She did.
Wow.
I don't know. Damn. I don't know whose bone is bigger. Yeah. I don't want to know that.
Nicole, what do you got?
Yeah, the whole, you know, scene where Delenn confronts Lanier and he basically says, like, yeah, I'm like, you have him now and that's your other half and I'm not needed. I don't feel comfortable and I feel like I'm, you know, not necessary anymore or whatever. And, you know, she tries to talk him out of it and stuff. And what it comes down to is like, yeah, he's in love with her and he doesn't want to be around.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I know, you know, like, I know that's why you're leaving. I think at that moment, she knew there's nothing she could say to make him stay. If he's to that point where he just feels like his presence there is not of use to her and he's uncomfortable more so than anything, he's not going to stay. Like, there's no reason for him. As much as he does love her and as much as he did pledge his life to her as her assistant or whatever. And like you said at the end, you'll always have my heart. You'll always have my service. I'll always be yours. P needs to go out and find himself or whatever. And he's going to go on a walkabout, you know, like Biggs did. Also, it made me think, how many times I don't know about you guys, but I've been there before where like I cared about somebody and they were with somebody else and it was hard for me to be around and see it because I was in love with this person or I cared about this person. You know what I mean? And I stopped coming around or stopped hanging out. And like I had to do that for myself because it just was too hard because it was too fresh and too new.
Justin,
I agree with a lot of what Nicole is saying. Except the fact that I don't think necessarily, maybe he's telling himself right now he's going to go out and prove himself to be the better choice. I really don't think that's going to end up being the case at all. To me, nothing about this shocked me. Nothing about this surprised me. Because if you think about ever since he first kind of divulged his feelings for Delenn, or at least when we, the viewers, started seeing it, there was a lot going on. They were in a war. And Lanier was distracted. Like, Lanier, to me, performed his best during the Shadow War and everything like that, where he was distracted. He was helping fight on a warship. There was a lot going on. So he was able to put a lot of what he was dealing with internally aside and focus on, this is what we have to accomplish. Now that that's all said and done, and now we're in kind of a peacetime lull, now he's forced to confront his feelings. Now he's forced to confront everything that he's been burying for, what, the last 2, maybe 3 years. And so now he has to go away to deal with it. And I think this is more about a journey about finding himself and finding his place in the universe, because he's kind of right in the fact that really Delenn doesn't need him anymore the way that she did early on in the series. She's got Sheridan now. She's got all these other responsibilities. And so I feel like Lanier just feels like he's stuck in place and he doesn't know where he fits. So honestly, as much as it sucks to see him leave, I do think this is the best thing for him to go out on his own, to figure out who he is, and to come back a stronger and better person. Not to try, I really do not think at all he will try to steal the line away from Sheridan. I think it's just, he has to become his own person now.
So the moral of the story is, go be happy with yourself.
Amen.
At least Jesse got it. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I kind of said this is a middling episode, I do think there are a lot of good character and a lot of good acting moments in this. And I thought that was especially true of Bill Mumy in this episode with Lanier. I thought his acting was very strong in this. And I guess the thing I chimed up or stuck my hand up to say here was kind of in response to, I forgot who said it now, I think it was Jesse, about really how the end scene kind of happened and Delenn's reaction to Lanier stepping off. And I guess my read on it was a little bit different. I think, you know, I don't think she was necessarily, you know, assessing, oh, did I make the right choice? Should I have picked Lanier over Sheridan? I don't think there's any question in her mind there. But I think maybe what she has is some worry and maybe some regret about how she handled the Lanier affection. We had a big debate before about whether or not Delenn was aware of how Lanier really felt about her or not. And it kind of seems that this episode makes it seemingly more clear that she was aware of it, and maybe just kind of, I mean, it sure felt like she just kind of brushed it under the rug. And in fact, earlier in the episode, when Delenn tells Sheridan what's going on, you know, and his response is like, oh, I wondered when that was finally going to happen. It made it clear that Delenn wasn't the only one who was aware of how Lanier felt about Delenn. And so the whole thing, to me, kind of feels like it was really weird. It was like this unspoken thing that everybody knew about, no one wanted to talk about. And now at the end, honestly, you know, does Lanier need to leave and remove himself from the situation? Yes. But I think it's very problematic. I don't know. It struck me in a very weird way that he's talking about going off to become a ranger so that he could toughen up and come back and prove himself the better man. That's freaky. And I think Delenn feels that too. Like, That's a volatile situation now waiting to happen.
Nicole.
I was going to say, Justin said something that made me remember the conversation with Veer that Lanier was having about how it's been a hell of a day. It's been a hell of a year. It's been a hell of a 5 years. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, I guess it has been a hell of a 5 years for Lanier because, you know, he was kind of masking his feelings at first and having to deal with all the shit that went down on top of like being in love with Delenn. And so, yeah. And then when Veer, hell of a life, okay, you win, like, it just made me laugh. But when Justin was talking, it made me think about that because, you know, he did. There was a war and there was all this other stuff. So maybe he was able to put that aside. But now that it's kind of a lull, it's like he's faced with it head on. And he's like, yeah, peace, bitches. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Bill Mooby said that Lanier is one of his favorite characters to play. And it's because of the growth of Lanier. Yeah. He said, like, you know, Will Robinson in Lost in Space was kind of, he was just playing himself. Whereas in Lanier, he comes in, he's a bright-eyed guy straight out of the monastery, learning everything, going to strip joints for the first time in season one. And then he gets to command a ship in a battle several times. And so he loves the growth that Lanier has throughout the series. So, and I think that kind of comes through on this as well, too. I do like that they made the joke about Shirley Temple because I can't prove it, but I'm sure that Bill Mooney and Shirley Temple probably hung out at least once or twice because they were both child actors. And Bill started when he was 3 years old in the late 50s, early 60s. So it makes perfect sense that they probably did meet, even though he said, I never heard of that Temple before.
Yeah, that made me laugh.
Well, plus the whole tie, too, with because Shirley Temple became an ambassador to several countries later in life too. So sitting there with the diplomatic aides drinking a Shirley Temple kind of, you know, hit that note for me too.
I looked it up. She only passed away 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It was recently.
Long life. A good life. But yeah, I do. I also have a soft spot for Bill Mooney because I'm a huge Twilight Zone fan. And if you've watched Twilight Zone, he appears in at least three episodes I can think of off the top of my head. And so, and Lost in Space, I used to watch as a kid in the 80s. It was on reruns on Sci-Fi Channel a lot.
Me too.
Yeah, so Bill Mooney is always special to me.
The character is really a fantastic character, and it's really a situation where if he really is going to be gone from the series, which we don't know that at this point at all, I just want to say one thing. He is one of the most virtuous characters on this show. You know, he has the best of qualities of most of them. I just really like the character, and this particular storyline with him is not a favorite of mine.
Let's move on to the main point of the show, which is our good friend Londo. Justin.
I wonder if this is intentional, and I don't know if any of you old ones have a any kind of background on this, but the entire Londo sequence felt very Dickensian to me. He's the Ebenezer Scrooge of this episode, and he's forced to confront all of his past misdeeds and everything like that. And it was very interesting just kind of how everybody he encountered, where first, you know, Delenn was kind of a little bit darker when she was with the tarot reader and, you know, the blood dripping out of the cards, which is to me very symbolic. Like, dude, all your cards are covered in blood. Which is very true to what, you know, what Londo's experience has been. But then first encountering Sheridan and then encountering Jakar was almost like the ghost of Christmas future. But then also in a little bit of a twist, the final character he encounters is Veer. And Veer's the one who basically makes him make the choice if he wants to live or die. And Veer's comment of your heart cannot bear the weight of your conscience or anything like that. And it was very... The whole thing was, it almost makes you think, like, when somebody's, and all of us here on this podcast, and I'm sure all of our listeners out there, have had to deal with the death of a loved one at one point or another. And the question that always comes up is in humanity is what's going through their brains during this moment of they're on their deathbed and stuff like that. And to me, that I wonder if that was JMS pulling in a lot of his own religious experience and stuff like that into it, being like, if you're laying there, if you're dying, what are you thinking about? Are you going through reliving your life and lamenting about the past mistakes you made? And to me, this kind of felt a very, you know, white light at the end of the tunnel. And what do you experience as you're maybe transitioning over? That's kind of why I feel like I love this episode so much. It is so deep in metaphor and so, you know, so strong in philosophical thought that I was absolutely hooked. Like, I had to go back and rewind those scenes a few times because I was so transfixed that I'm like, oh crap, I didn't write anything down. If I don't write it down, I'm not going to remember it. So I had to go back and watch it again and just try and like process it. And this was good stuff. And I guess I'll save the rest of my comments for our discussion about is Londo truly redeemed that Scott wants to have, because I have some serious thoughts. Maybe not a lot of you will be surprised by them.
Like,
so Scott, you've said it multiple times that this is the story of Londo and to an extent Jakar at times. And I love this episode because to me, this is almost following Londo's conscience through everything he's done. And you even have that line from Delenn when she's standing there with Sheridan in Medlab and she talks about everything that she's been through with Londo about making her angry, making her sad, making her feel all these things, but never has she felt sorry for him until now. And I love that delivery because this is like the entire arc of Londo put into this one episode through both the dream sequence as well as even what Delenn and others are doing for exposition outside of that. So that's one of the reasons I love the storytelling of this episode, as well as the acting, because you've got Mira Furlan doing a great job in this. You've got Stephen first pulling off Veer. You've got obviously Peter with Londo, but then even having Andreas when he takes the role of the Centauri Emperor sitting on the throne. And he, I mean, because Cartesia overacted that, right? When Cartesia in his full insanity is sitting there on the throne doing that countdown. And you have Andreas now doing that same bit with just that over the top, like glee and pleasure in what they're doing. So I just love the whole bit of that through the dream sequence and even the pieces of exposition in Medlab.
Nicole.
A couple things that stuck out to me were when Londo encounters Delenn and he's like, oh, that was weird. And then he's talking to Sheridan. And towards the end of the conversation with Sheridan, he said, everything here is so unkind or something like that. And Sheridan says, well, there's a time for clarity or a time for charity and there's a time for truth. And that was like, oh shit, that was a mic drop moment for me, you know, because, and basically Sheridan's like, turn around or you're going to die and face, you know, and like, it's clear that he doesn't want to face Jakar. He says multiple times, I can't, I don't want to, I don't know what he wants, whatever. And then when he finally faces Jakar basically calls him on everything. Oh, I also thought it was crazy when Jakar confronts him in the dream and then Jakar walks in. It was so weird. I'm like, does he know he's dreaming about him? Like, it was just weird. Is it like an alien thing? But, and then at the end, when he opens his eyes and he looks at Jakar and he just says, I'm sorry, Jakar. And you just saw the smile on his face. Like, I at this point I was like crying. And then at that point I started like sobbing. I'm like getting emotional talking about it now. Like, it was just so, that was like the pinnacle change of their whole dynamic and relationship. This heavy moment, I'm sitting here crying, and then here's Londo bitching about the food. I'm like, oh, he's gonna be fine. You know what I mean? But God, what amazing fucking actors. Like, seriously, that whole sequence between those two specifically, I mean, I just, you guys know I'm emotional and I'm a sap, okay?
No, not at all.
Yeah, but I was just sitting here crying. Like, I'm like, nobody told me I was going to cry in this episode. Why did anyone warn me? You know, I wasn't expecting that. But I just felt like that. It was like leading up to that moment. And when he finally said it, it was almost like a collective, like, oh, everybody can breathe. You know what I mean? Like, I felt it from like start to finish. I felt that in me. And that's, I mean, the hallmarks of a good TV show, a good writing and good acting, because if it can evoke that emotion out of you, like you're feeling what the characters are feeling. Damn, I like need to go watch it again, honestly.
Jesse.
I guess I'll just lead us into this conversation that Scott wants us to have about, do we feel like he is redeemed, right? So when Delenn was talking about the, you know, I've never felt sorry for him, stuff like that, my brain started to click back to the entire, you know, couple last seasons where Emily and I have both been very like, fuck you, you're not redeemed. You're not sorry. You've done atrocious things. So watching him walk himself through redemption for like, in my brain, for him saying, you know, when he opens his eyes and he says, I'm sorry, those aren't empty words. Those are words that he's had. And basically, we see his body physically react to him trying to fight those words. And then when he finally does grasp that, his conscience opens up and you can see actual redemption for Londo there. And so I guess, you know, as much as I fought it over the last couple of months, because I'm like, fuck you, you've done all of these terrible things. You've killed millions and millions of people. I don't buy your sorries. I don't buy your bullshit. I don't feel sorry for you. I don't care how funny you are in each episode. I don't think you're redeemed. After this episode, I absolutely believe that he's found his conscience. He's actually making steps towards negating the vision that he's had where Jakar kills him. And, you know, we've joked about, oh, that's my prediction. I think he's still going to do it. He's actually taking steps to make sure that that doesn't happen. So it was kind of cool to see. Like, I definitely had that thought process going through the whole dream. Like, I'm like, oh, are we going to actually do it? And he got to do it. And when he woke up and he opened his eyes and he said those words, I was like, yeah, I do think that there's some actual meaning behind that. So
Jesse, what I love doing too is after this episode, just wondering how, because Londo and Nicole, you called this out too, Londo saying, I can't turn around, I can't face him. How many times has Londo been ready to say, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but he's just so scared?
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about with Lanier, we've all kind of been down that road. We've all been down that road too.
Sure.
Where it's like, all I got to do is turn around and say, I'm sorry, but it's so fucking scary.
Well, and it's, you don't know how that person is going to act. You don't know if they're going to punch you in your face. They're going to, you know, pull out a gun and, you know, shoot you or stab you.
Yeah.
Or if they're going to actually accept it. And that's like, what's, you know, I always tell people that I work with, what's the worst that can happen? Somebody can say no. Like, that's the worst that can happen. But in this situation, if you turned around and said, yes, I'm ready to make this commitment to you, and I've never said sorry my whole life, and, you know, my first person that I say sorry to is going to be somebody that I'm actually sorry to, and that person says, fuck you, and stabs you in your heart, that's like, that's devastating. So the terror there, I could absolutely see, like, the fear of doing that.
Justin.
Yeah, and I think actually, Jesse, you hit this 100% on the head. So I'm not going to go much deeper into that, because as we've seen the pieces throughout the last, several episodes, even in the last season, of him trying to make right for all of his past sins. But then again, never actually saying the words, I'm sorry. Never confronting what he did. We did see a little bit of, in the beginning, where he was very remorseful about his role in everything that happened. And, you know, that takes place in the future. So now we see maybe kind of the steps as to why he feels the way he does during in the beginning. But it's something that I've been kind of hoping for, shocker, for a while, of trying to maybe see him face his demons and accept what he's done. And he did everything he could to make right, except apologize to the one person in the entire galaxy that he needed to apologize to. And all the actions in the world can make that person feel like that they're trying to do good and they're trying to make things right. But then finally him opening up to his arch nemesis and finally saying, I'm sorry. Yeah, that was a tearjerker moment. And to kind of go off of that, you know, Nicole, you had said that it was a smile and he, you know, it was like a very satisfied smile. I didn't necessarily see it that way. I saw it as pure emotion. Like he was about to crack and break down crying and had to walk out of the room. That's how I saw it. Like, yes, to a degree, I agree with you. It was very, he was very happy and thankful that he said sorry. But looking at his face, to me, like, if I don't walk out of the room, I'm going to burst into tears and I don't want to do this in front of everyone. So I'm just going to turn around and walk away. And that's what I think Jakar was doing in that scene, more than like smiling and being very satisfied and stuff like that. But one thing I kind of want to go back to real quick is the comment about the bottles at the bar and how the bottles were empty. And he's like, you know, this is all, how much deeper can they get with this metaphor about the bottles being empty? And I don't know if maybe I looked at it kind of bit the wrong way, but Sheridan's glass had something in it, but it was getting low. And we talked about how Sheridan doesn't have a whole lot of time left. I think at this point he has like what, 19 years left?
Roughly.
But he's sitting there with a but he's sitting there with a drink, and all the bottles in front of Londo are empty, and he can't pour himself a drink to save his life. But Sheridan's got a drink, but there's not a whole lot in it. And again, that just to me felt like a very much this is definitely they're talking about an end of life scenario.
Emily.
Okay. So I know I was with Jesse for a long time about whether or not Londo could ever be redeemed. And I'm still not sure he has been. And I was, while you guys were talking, I was thinking about it. And has Delenn actually been redeemed? Because we have talked about her responsibility and starting the in her response to humans attacking their ships and starting the war and how many people were killed during that war. And she changed her tune sooner than Londo did, as like feeling remorse, trying to find a way forward and like not continue on that path that they had been on. And if she can be redeemed, can Londo, or is there the point at which you get off the path, but you're still not considered redeemed because you can't like you there's nothing you can do. There's no apology that's sufficient. There's no action you can take that will ever make up for all the horror and terror you caused. So do we redeem one and not the other? Do we redeem both? Do we redeem none?
Delenn married Sheridan, so doesn't that get her off the hook?
Absolutely the fuck not, because I don't like
Man, I thought that argument would work with you since you're not the biggest Sheridan fan at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's some sort of punishment, but I don't know if it equates.
I would go back, though, and argue part of Delenn's atonement was going through the whole transformation to bridge the Mimbari and human souls back together.
Yeah.
And everything she's done since then, because unlike Londa, who has just continued to, you know,
be a dick,
use mass drivers, as Chakar points out in this episode, Delenn has done everything she can from the gathering on to fix what she did. Londo and hasn't done
it that. Seems like a lot of it's perspective, because there are still humans that will never see her.
But here's the question, though. Is redemption only available when everyone forgives you, or when you forgive yourself and are able to move forward?
I don't know that I'm a big fan of it.
Well, if we waited for Emily to allow people to have redemption, no one would fucking redeemed ever. She carries a grudge.
Yes, I do.
I know you do. So
it's an issue. I'm not working on it.
Let's not use you as a benchmark. How about that?
Yeah, let's not use me as a benchmark. Good idea.
I like Emily because she's backed me up the whole time about the whole Londo thing when everybody else was like hugs and loves and rainbows and sunshine. And Emily and I are both like, fuck you, Londo. Fuck you, Londo. Fuck you, Londo. So.
Well, he even points out, he's like, but it wasn't my idea and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, that doesn't get you off the hook, man. Because, you know, what Jakar says to him couldn't be more true. You didn't say a word. You didn't speak up for them. So you're just as culpable as others. Maybe not quite as much as Reefa, but that does not get you off the hook, sir.
Well, yeah, and I'm not going to lie. I mean, whenever I was making that argument, usually towards Justin, because Justin's been the one who's like, yeah, Londo's good now. I have been aping this episode. He was there on the ship when they were dropping asteroids. And the argument was, well, he didn't do it. You're right, he didn't. But he didn't stop it. And that's the whole thing, is he wasn't sorry because it happened. He was sorry that he got caught. Nicole.
When it comes to redemption, you have a really interesting way to look at it, Emily, because I wasn't even thinking about Delenn and her redemption. But the thing with redemption, and Scott, you kind of started talking about it a little bit. I kind of feel like you can only control what you do and your attitude and your effort and what you say, you know? So if you legitimately are sorry and you make the effort to say, I'm sorry, and you do what you can to apologize and try to make things right, it's up to, you know, the other person to react how they're going to react, right? So, and like you said, you know, she's done so much for the human race, but there's always going to be someone who's like, she's a fucking alien, fuck her, you know what I mean? So I feel like when it comes to redemption, we can do our part and we can do our part, but like, we can't predict what other people are going to do. And even if you do everything right someone is always going to have something to say or feel negative about it. So I kind of just wanted to throw my thought in there and kind of what Scott was saying, like when it comes to redemption, it's like you have to forgive yourself or no one will ever forgive you. You know what I mean? And I think this was Londo allowing himself to face what he did and admit it for the first time. Like, you know, I think he's known that he fucked up and he's wanted to say it, like we've kind of talked about earlier. But the fact that he finally gets it now, I think was a very pinnacle development in his character. And then Jesse even said it on the head earlier, like, it is hard to say you're sorry because you don't know what the other person's going to do or how they're going to react. But if you know you need to say sorry for something, you have to find that within yourself to do it. And if you take that step, you did what you could. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a relationship or a friendship or whatever. If you put the effort in and you try and you do what you can to fix it or say you're sorry or whatever, at least you can know that you did your part and that you tried.
Like, well, that just on the bit with Londo and the redemption piece, it even started that way when he kept hearing there's a word and he kept going back to, I couldn't have changed anything. I couldn't have stopped anything. And it was that message of you could have said something. So right up until the very end of this, Londo was still making those excuses. And you saw the wall start to crumble when the excuses started of, I couldn't have changed anything. I couldn't have stopped it. And that even came out. It's like, no, you couldn't have. You wouldn't have changed the course of any of this. But you could still say the word, you could have said something, and you didn't. So I think at the end with redemption there. So a question to throw out towards our newbies, since it's kind of came up with Jakar at the end and the smile. So in this episode, you've got Jakar in the dream, and Jakar even says in this hallucination dream, whatever you want to call it, am I your conscience or am I part of the Jakar that was left when I had the when I did this telepath assault of you way back? So then you've got the end with that with Jakar in there. So from our newbies, I would just like to hear what you think. Is Jakar in this a manifestation of Londo's conscience? Or is this maybe a part of Jakar left behind with Londo?
I think it's both. Because I thought of when he did those drugs or whatever, I was like, oh, shit, maybe he is. And then when he came in while he turned around, he finally turned around and faced him. And that's when he walked in to his bedside. So I don't know, man. I think it's a little bit of both.
Well, we got one taker on both.
Or is there anyone else want to answer, Blake?
I think he's a manifestation. Like, I don't think that he's actually part of him. I think it's his conscience that's getting him. So
yeah, I agree. I don't think there's anything to the psychic imprint bullshit, whatever. I think it's purely that Londo has inflicted personally, and he knows it, a tremendous amount of suffering on Jakar. And if he hasn't personally inflicted it, he's been a party to it, a firsthand witness, whatever. And so Jakar is the ultimate manifestation of his conscious.
And by the way, Blake, the answer is she's using her, you know, he's using his Guinan powers from generations. And Jesse is just going to stare at me. And so is Nicole.
I don't know what that means. I
just go with it.
We have the Nexus in Babylon 5.
Guinan just happens to arrive. Just
is this a Twilight thing? I don't know what we're talking
yes,
about.
It is
no, we would not be quoting that garbage.
It is absolutely a Twilight thing. Okay, Kevin, what do you got?
My question is this. So we saw him say nothing when Jakar got whipped, and we saw Londo say nothing when Narn got bombed with asteroids. And a big reason why he didn't say anything is because it would have completely assaulted his station within the Centauri government and, you know, his nobility and everything along that goes along with that. And he probably would have been taken down at least a few pegs, if not more. So my question is, do you think he's changed at this point? Or do you think that he's just sorry that he didn't do it, but if he did it, if he had it to do over again, would he do it the same way or would he do it differently? Because that to me is the true measure of whether he's changed or not.
He gets no redemption from me. I'll take it from here, Scott. If without the actual change, and I think that that's what I was talking about earlier, without the actual change, he gets no forgiveness from, at least from me. Without him, because you see him in the dream fighting it, and then all of a sudden he actually is like, listen, if I want to live, I need to get my conscience right. And like, without the actual change, I'm not willing to say that he's redeemed. So I do think that he's made some actual change. Now, if we get into season five and he murders another million people, I'm just going to fucking quit. So,
Nicole.
I was going to say, I don't know, to answer Kevin's question, because we haven't seen what happens now, what happens next. All we saw was his struggle in the dream sequence and his apology. I do think it profoundly impacted him, but I don't know what's going to happen next. So I think that story at the end that he was talking about with Veer about like a piece of you dies or whatever, maybe that's kind of where he's feeling now. Like maybe he feels like he needed to let that go so he can move on and be a better person. So I see a glimmer of hope that there could be potentially that he is thoroughly changed and going to be a better person. But until I see what happens in the next couple episodes, I don't know for sure.
One thing I want to say, and this is really only for those who have read JMS's autobiography, and our newbies haven't yet, but I hope they do after we're done. There is a scene in that where Andreas Katsoulis knows his time's almost up. He had cancer from a lot of smoking, and there is a dinner that Peter, JMS, and a few others attend with Andreas, and they all kind of know that that's it, but they don't want to say it. And this episode, watching it for the first time since reading that in that autobiography, this episode's rough because it's not about really Jakar and Andreas, but my God, when you see like Nicole and Justin, when you guys are talking about the just what Jakar's reaction is to Londo, I'm having flashbacks to that scene in the book, and it's rough. Jesse.
So he was dying in this episode?
No, but I'm just saying it's making a connection for me. There's no.
Got it.
I mean, Londo was dying, but...
Well, yeah, but I thought you meant...
I'm just thinking Andreas's reaction, and it'll make more sense when you, or if you read the book.
Got it. I will read it when we're done, so...
Anything else for the episode, guys, before we get into questions and predictions?
God, I hope next week's episode doesn't make me sob.
What is next week's episode? I honestly don't know. Hold on. Oh, have fun with that one. Oh, okay. The Paragon of Animals. It's going to be great.
Oh, no.
Are there furries?
Wait. Do Fine. Any animals get hurt? Because I can't handle that shit.
Does the dog die? Because I won't watch it.
I won't. Yeah.
If the dog dies, I'm not watching.
We'll discuss the episode next. Okay.
Oh,
let's go ahead.
It'll be a special guest star, Christy Gnome.
Oh, shit.
We're filming from a gravel pit, are we?
You see that she now said Biden should be killing his dog, too?
I mean, well, she's also a cunt, so, you know.
Somebody should fucking... beat the shit out of that woman.
I usually would say you can send your hate mail to gray17podcast@gmail.com. But if you have a problem with what Blake just said, this ain't the show for you. Have a nice day. Okay, guys, let's go ahead and get into questions and predictions. And for those of you who just joined us, welcome, I guess. We are going to ask our newbies who have not seen anything past this episode if they have any lingering questions or if they have any predictions of what could be coming up next. Let's go to Nicole first. Questions and prediction.
Will we see Lanier again and how often? I know you can't answer that for me, but I just would like to know. And then has Londo actually changed? Will we see him be a better person going forward? And prediction wise, I honestly have no idea what to expect. So I don't have any predictions.
Justin, questions, predictions.
I mean, I guess the glaring question in the room is how much does Londo actually change? Why was Sheridan wearing a Ranger uniform during this bar sequence with Londo? Because we've never, every time he was wearing something different that he's actually worn during the show, but I don't remember him actually ever wearing a Ranger uniform. So is that some kind of foreshadowing? Question three, we noticed we saw Veer lose weight towards the last couple seasons. And one thing I was wondering, I don't remember if we talked about this before, about how long after the show he actually passed away, but was this just natural weight loss for him or was it him starting to become ill?
So I can jump in on that one and do that with, because this isn't a spoiler, Justin. So Stephen first was severe diabetic and was basically told he needed to lose weight or else he would have died sooner than he did.
Okay.
So part of the weight loss in the show was him under doctor's care, losing weight in response to his health conditions with being a diabetic. And they actually wrote, they didn't really write it in, but there's throughout the series, they started having to adjust his costumes more. And that's why he kind of gets a different wardrobe later in the series, is because they had to completely adjust the costumes and redo costumes for him, given the amount of weight he was losing while trying to get that under control.
Yeah, sometimes they didn't do exactly a great job of that either. So yeah,
I remember when they put him in the Minbari Mumu. That was part of that.
I'm not sure if it helped or not, but First didn't pass away until 2017. So he got so a little bit under 20 more years.
Yeah.
He lived a while after that, because I didn't remember when he actually passed. And then and you guys can also discuss this beyond the rim, but if instead Lanier had left for the Texas Rangers, what position would he have played?
Shortstop all day.
Because I think if he were to play for the New York Rangers, he would have been a goalie, because he's been playing goalie for DeLand his entire life.
Wait, the Texas Rangers or the New... I'm curious. Are we talking about baseball or hockey?
There's two different... Both.
Got it.
I was talking about both. You know, like baseball, what position in baseball would he have played for the Texas Rangers? And then if he were to play for the New York Rangers, then I think he would have been a goalie.
Mike's point earlier, which is the most incel-y of the positions?
I was going to say the position where he goes and plays with himself.
Left, I said catcher.
Left field?
Catcher. Right field. Nothing happens in right field.
Oh, that's true. It is right field. My bad.
For all those who used to have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles VHS tape, I play right field. It's important. You know, you got to learn how to catch. You got to learn how to throw. I play right field out where the dandelions grow. And those who know, know. We'll move on.
But anyway, my prediction is... My sole prediction is I actually think Lanier would do quite well with the Rangers, and I think he'll finally find the piece that he's looking for.
Jesse, questions, predictions.
My prediction is that, okay, hear me out. Sheridan only lives 20 years. So Lanier goes out, proves himself, and picks up DeLynn when Sheridan dies. So that's
so what prediction. You're saying is Lanier comes in for sloppy seconds when Sheridan's gone?
He's wanted sloppy section.
Wow, Jesse.
Well, Jesse, tell us more.
He's wanted sloppy sex. Moving on.
Woo-hoo.
Yep, a whole bottle of wine. Let's move on.
It was, hey, by the way, when we started this show, it was only half drank. So if it's
no, it was one glass in, by the way. And here's the thing. We fucking derailed 2.5 minutes in. So don't
blame glass, me. But how many ounces does the glass hold, Jesse?
It was a rather large glass. No, not the bottle.
It's a fucking, it's a Prosecco glass, guys. Don't.
Is it the glass that holds an entire bottle of wine?
Blake's glass is like 2 times that size.
Yes.
That's a big glass.
You can't say I had 17 shots and 17 beers and think that you're going to be as drunk with one as the other. So stop it. Moving on.
Do you have any questions or predictions?
I'm done.
Aside from Lanier needing sloppy sex, what else you got?
So we're done. We're moving on.
It's all just one glass if you refill it before it hits the bottom.
Right. It's if I get one of those. Yep. Moving on. Show me your butthole.
Emily?
I know what I'm getting Jesse for Christmas.
It's going to be one of the Dune popcorn buckets, isn't it?
Emily, finish this.
I don't know if I can.
Quickly, please.
I really don't.
Where do I follow that?
But my question was actually, does Lanier return after Sheridan dies?
There you, me and Emily were here.
Exactly. Because, I mean, then the newly elected schmarmy politician president is out of the fucking way and we don't have to see his shitty ass hair anymore.
Is this really a question or is this wish fulfillment?
Tomato, tomato, dude. Tomato, tomato.
Got a stupid goatee. Let's be clear.
I like his goatee. His
poofy hair and oh,
you I like his facial. Goatee. I like his facial hair.
What does Nicole likes Twilight.
Listen, right. There's nothing wrong with Twilight.
Oh, there is so much fucking wrong with Twilight.
I guarantee you, we have at least one listener that likes Twilight.
The adult werewolf imprints himself on a baby.
It's one part of the story. Oh, okay. There's so much more.
We'll ignore that part.
I'm not saying that.
So we ignore the creepy ass pedophile part because the rest
of it's. We're going to ignore the grooming. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Oh the 300 year old vampire that pretends to be a high school student and picks up the high schooler. We're fine with that too.
It's a movie. It's not real.
People ignore inconvenient parts of the Bible.
So the entire Bible?
Nicole, I usually try to defend you against these guys because we know how they feel about lightsabers, but I can't defend you.
That's fine. I don't care. Fan. I read the books. I liked them. I liked the movies. I don't give a fuck. You can judge me all you want.
What's this Bible you talk about?
I think I touched one once and it burned.
Oh my God.
Let's have a bonus episode about the Bible and see how many viewers we get for that one.
Honestly, at this point, we've ragged on it so much, we should have a bonus episode reviewing Twilight.
Oh God. Do I have to watch all 10 of them or whatever it is?
I've never seen it either. So
I will take one for the team, Nicole. You and me. Let's do this.
Did this just happen?
I want to be in on this. Yes.
Can we do...
Mike, you suggested it. You are completely to blame for this.
Series of live reviews. The movie.
We need to make this some kind of a fundraiser or I'm not doing it.
There you go.
You better donate some money to Cancer Kids or this shit's not happening.
Is that going to be our extra life for next fall?
Maybe. It could be part of it. I don't know.
We're going to MST3K the shit out of this.
Oh my God.
I will say the first movie is the worst movie, but then it gets better.
I happen to know an executive producer of MST3K. So was it executive?
Who, Felicia? One of the originals?
Mike, what are you? What's your title? You're sort of producer.
Yeah, I think I might be.
You paid good money for that title. What was it?
I did. I paid good money for that title that I never got to use.
I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about, but can
I checked out. I'm making a grocery lit order, so.
I don't know what's happening.
This is the quality you come to expect from Grey 17. If you thought we derailed this episode, wait until next week when we talk about episode 3 of season 5, The Peregrine of Animals.
The secret term is show me your butthole. You're still listening. Show me your butthole.
Don't tell them that. We're going to get memes of like pictures of buttholes.
We're going to get pictures of people's assholes. I don't want that.
Jesse, you were really concerned last week about all of the dick pics you were going to get about hot dogs. Now you just solicited butthole pictures.
See, Justin, I think you hit on it. I think she's upset that she didn't get any dick pics.
I'm kind of upset.
So she's doubling down.
She wants butthole pictures.
I got not a single hot dog.
Hold on a minute.
Oh, no, please, Justin, sit down.
If it doesn't come to me, I'm fine with it.
You're going to see it if it doesn't come to you, Jesse, because they're going to make you look.
Everybody's going to enjoy it. That's what's going to happen.
You're going to hold your little eyelids open.
You can send your wormholes to Jesse.
No! Okay.
Ew.
Okay. The secret word is butterflies are the best.
Jesus. Okay, so.
The secret word is Wayne Gretzky's butthole.
Oh my God, no.
I need a real adult, okay?
And you came to this crowd?
I'm traumatized.
Evan, show us in the doll where Gretzky touched you.
Don't send me pictures of your butthole. I don't want to see them. We're done. You're all fired.
Talk about HR problems.
Everybody but Mike, you're all fired.
I'm ready to leave.
Okay, so until next week. When we talk about the Paragon of Animals, the magic words are Wayne Gretzky's butthole, show us your butthole, and butterflies are pretty. Take your pick. Until then, I've been Scott, and with me is these fucking animals. Go ahead.
Oh, fuck it. Like
Justin.
What? Jesse.
I just want to say I didn't do anything. I'm Nicole.
Bullshit.
Birds aren't real, Mike.
Emily's dying.
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, Emily and Kevin were too. Moving on. We're done. Yay!
Yay!
Mike, if you heard the snort laugh that I did when you said birds aren't real, oh my God.
Oh, Christ.
That was the highlight of my night. Thank you.
Oh, I just.
We're watching this both ways.
This is why I love Mike, because you never know what the fuck is going to come out of his mouth, and usually when it does, it's just epic.
This is true.
Thanks. I'm glad I'm known for something.
Thank you for listening to Grey 17, a Babylon 5 podcast. You can find all the places to listen to and watch this podcast at anchor.fm/Grey17podcast or youtube.com/Grey17podcast. We want to hear from you, so join the conversation at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or Patreon. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review where you are listening to or watching this podcast. Grey 17 is not affiliated with, and the podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by Warner Brothers or any other owners of the Babylon 5 copyright. All clips included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. The opening and closing themes are available from Falling Matter on YouTube.
And what's out there?
The Rim.
And beyond that?
The truth.
Welcome back to Beyond the Rim. Again, this is a spoiler section. If you've not watched past The Very Long Night of Londo Mollari, this is where you should leave us. If not, we'll go ahead and dive into the questions and predictions we got. But I think first, Blake has got something he wants to add.
Thanks, Scott. So I asked the question with our newbies about Jakar and the role he had in Londo's hallucination, on whether he was a manifestation of Londo's conscience, whether it was a remnant left over from the telepath attack Jakar launched on Londo. And this is the first time I've watched this episode since The Road Home. Really the first time I've done an in-depth rewatch since The Road Home came out. And in that, you had Jakar, this entity as Jakar, beyond the rim on the galactic plane, talking to Sheridan about the path of the universe and how all this intersects. And for me, this tied into that, just thinking of that scene in The Road Home. And you've got Jakar in Londo's hallucination, and you really don't know, especially given the ending where he's standing there in med lab and Jakar, or Londo looks at Jakar and says, "I'm sorry," and he just gets that smile like he already knew. So for me, it really ties in with how Jakar is portrayed in The Road Home, and really just makes a nice through thread on that for me, and is again one of the reasons why I really like this episode. And we'll get to the other reason, because I believe it was Justin asked about Sheridan wearing the Ranger uniform. That gets into one of the other reasons why I really like how this episode was done.
Yeah, I still stand behind my original idea that I don't think I even brought up in the first section of this, that I think Jakar genuinely just went back to Londo's bedside because he's gotten to a point where Londo isn't an enemy anymore. He's not overly a friend. And then so he got caught off guard when Londo said he was sorry. And that's why he backed away.
Yeah.
And I like the spiritual aspect too.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think like a lot of people, they have weird mixed feelings about Londo. He's not really anybody's friend necessarily, except maybe Garibaldi once upon a time. But everybody has a connection to him. He has a way of. I keep seeing imprint now, and I can't get it out of my head. But he has a way of imprinting himself on everybody in ways that they don't necessarily know or understand. Or
it's still less scuzzy than Twilight, so yeah. It's fine. I think Sheridan and Delenn say it best, Mike. I would miss him if he was gone. Mm. You know, we don't love him, but I'll miss him.
Everybody has that weird guy at the office that you don't really get along with or want to socialize with, but you're like, he does add something to the situation.
Let's dive into the questions. The first one is, will we see Lanier again, and how often? And along with those same lines, does Lanier return after Sheridan dies?
Well, we're going to see him quite a bit more. I don't know if I would choose to at this point, given where the character goes, and I know we all have thoughts about that. As far as whether Lanier would come back after Sheridan dies, I don't think so.
No, in fact, Sleeping in Light, he's not there.
Right.
It's before Sheridan dies, but it's close.
Yeah, I just don't think Delenn is in love with Lanier at any point. Mm-hmm. She does not have a romantic feeling for him. Their relationship is of student and a mentor and of friends, but... Mm-hmm. She clearly does not have feelings for him.
Yeah, and this is where I have some weird questions about the whole thing and how she handled it, maybe. You know, on one hand, he might just be a more stalkery personality, and it's not like there's no onus on Delenn to shut him down. But on the other hand, I wonder if maybe part of her regretful feelings are that she didn't make it more clear that, you know, she never will have a shot, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah,
because it definitely, again, the way that this leaves off is really icky feeling to me. Oh,
and it only gets worse. I mean, I've made it very clear, and Kevin, you and I agree on this. I think everyone agrees on this. I hate where this character goes from here on out. And actually, yeah. I mentioned the interview with Bill Mumy he did several years ago where he talked about how he loves Lanier. He then spends 2 or 3 minutes talking about how he hates season 5. And he hates the way Lanier goes from being a character who is built up and who has become a hero of the story to being a wimp and to being a guy who runs out from danger many times. And he actually has a better ending for Lanier than JMS did. He says, what I would have done is saved that ranger, and we're going to get there when we get to objects at rest. I would have saved that ranger, and I would have saved Sheridan, and then said to DeLynn, look, I'm the guy. I went and saved your boyfriend. But it's just... And the other thing, too, and we haven't really gotten to the behind-the-scenes stuff, but there is some folks out there who... believe that this is JMS being vindictive to Bill Mumy. And the line is that Bill Mumy said that I want a love story, and JMS said, be careful what you wish for. So I just, this really tarnishes season five for me a lot.
Yeah.
We'll get more into it.
And Bill Mumy asked to have this aspect written in as far as him having romantic feelings for Delenn, but JMS made a very conscious decision to take the character in this direct, in this horrible, horrible direction. And you're right, Scott. Season five suffers because of the Lanier storyline.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we got more to talk about with Lanier because he goes incel all the way, baby. So we'll have more to talk. But let's move on to, is Londo actually changed?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yeah. That really is the best way to put it.
Because, I mean, Londo's still going to make shitty decisions, but I also think Londo sees the destiny that's in front of him and he actively tries to figure out ways to do what he can, even knowing what's coming.
Yeah.
Because even with the whole bit when he's in the throne room, we go back to in the beginning and he's telling that story to the kids that takes place during War Without End, when he's got DeLynn and Sheridan held captive, he's drinking himself under the table so he can let them go. He still ultimately is trying to do the right thing, even with some of these other forces out there.
Yeah. And I think this is one of the strongest points for Londo. And I do think he's, Blake, to your point, he makes bad decisions still, but I think he is a changed person after that. But I think his true redemption for me, even though it's such a bad thing for Londo, is when he goes to get the Keeper. And that last scene with him and Jakar before he goes to get the Keeper, and he truly tells Jakar how he feels about him. And Jakar, unlike in this episode, actually reciprocates. That is the peak for Londo being quote unquote good. And then of course he has to go get his Keeper immediately after that. And that's why it's so traumatic. And so just, it's rough, but we'll get there. We're almost there.
There's going to be quite a bit before that with the two of them. You know, he's going to go, you know, Jakar's going to go back to Centauri Prime with him and be his bodyguard, you know, and they have some nice buddy comedy moments. And, you know, it's very clear after this episode that their relationship has changed for the better. I'm not going to say that it's, you know, it's of, you know, like nothing ever happened, but it certainly is, you know, massively better than it ever has been before. And it's a fun part of season five for a bit there.
That whole Centauri arc is what saved season five for me. But also, I mean, we were just bashing on JMS's writing with Lanier. What I do like about what JMS did was he set this turn up both for Jakar and Londo back at late season four. It wasn't a light switch. They're not like, oh, now we're happy together. It was, you know, we had the scene where they were getting drunk after Sheridan DeLynn's wedding and perving out on Sheridan DeLynn. So we kind of gradually got to a point where they're okay to be okay with each other.
This is a really different series because most of the series is written by one guy. And I know we've talked about this before, but whenever we have criticisms, it doesn't mean that we don't like JMS's writing overall. It just means that there's times in which we're not a fan of this or that, but you know, we wouldn't be on the show if we weren't huge fans of JMS's writing overall, big time.
Well, I think JMS would agree with that. I mean, he says he had several nervous breakdowns while writing the show. And at this point, he's burning on both ends even more because not only is he doing season five, he's doing some movies for TNT, and he's queuing up Crusade. So the dude is, and we haven't really discussed it yet, but he lost his notes for season five. The joke is that he had them all on note cards, left him at a hotel room, and the maid threw him out when he had left him there. So he had to rebuild season five from scratch. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons go into why season five's a little rough, and I'm sure we'll talk more about those. So Blake, you already kind of alluded to it. Why was Sheridan wearing a Ranger uniform?
Because the whole time that he's walking and talking with Londo, it's the evolution of Sheridan's life. He starts in the Earth Force uniform, then the jacket's gone and it's the white shirt that he had when they broke away from Earth. Then it became the black Army of Light rebirth uniform. Then it went to the Ranger robes of Ranger One, because in Sleeping in the Light, Sheridan becomes Ranger One. Mm-hmm. And then we go to Sheridan in the white robes becoming the Ball of Energy, which at the end of Sleeping in the Light, Lorien shows back up and takes Sheridan with him. Mm-hmm. So it's the complete evolution of the Sheridan arc as he walks with Londo discussing life and death. So the foreshadowing through that, I really enjoyed.
I don't know if this is what they were going for. I haven't read anywhere, but it really reminds me of 2001 in the hotel room at the end, where we see just the evolution all the way into the Star Child. It's kind of the same thing. Let's go ahead and move into the predictions. And oh, Justin, my sweet summer child, Lanier will find peace while going to the Rangers.
Oh, if only.
I think that would have been a better story if he did. Maybe people would have turned into Legends of the Rangers if Lanier was on the ship. I don't know. But yeah, no, he does not find peace. In fact, he will quit the Rangers before, well, he takes a break from the Rangers before he gets fully Ranger-fied. And that's when he lets Sheridan die, although Sheridan saves himself. But Lanier definitely let Sheridan, you know, die. So, and then he'll go off with Leeta and blow up Psycor, because why not?
Yeah, because that's a plot line that he had absolutely everything to do with until that moment.
Yeah.
I would love, and I don't, we have been trying, but I would love to sit down with Bill Mumy and just pick his brain about everything, because of all the folks in this show, I think he'd be the one who have the most interesting story from season one to season. And I'd love to chat with him.
That's really the problem, I think, is, you know, JMS hasn't ever been afraid to, you know, he's never shied away from, I guess what I would say, difficult character dynamics or stories, themes. And the fact that, you know, Lanier ends up in a love triangle sort of situation with Sheridan and Delenn isn't, you know, it's not implausible. And it's really a very realistic situation to potentially be in. But like the way that it happens is the part that sucks, because you have four seasons of Lanier being built up to be, you know, I've called him the golden retriever, right? The war hero, the likable guy with, you know, yeah, there's a hint of his feelings for Delenn, but there's never anything else to it. There's never anything in Lanier's character that, you know, feels that same kind of icky way as, yes, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to be this weird heartsick loser who's, you know, going to make bad choices and become a bad person, then do bad things. And like it, and then they hit you with all of it in season five.
Yeah.
That's the part that sucks.
Yeah. And like, I'm feeling deja vu, because I just talked Objects at Rest with another podcast, which I'm going to drop that on our bonus feed just because it was a good conversation. But my biggest issue is we talk about Londo's redemption so much, and Lanier doesn't get the chance to be redeemed. If what happens to Lanier in Objects at Rest happens five episodes from now, we could have the rest of the season where Lanier learns his lesson and becomes a better person. But instead, an hour before the series is completely done, he flies off in a little fighter being a little pissy bastard. And that's what pisses me off.
Well, yeah, it doesn't feel like this is a progression of his character or his story. It feels like it was a sudden knee-jerk twist, you know, not the part where he has feelings, the part where his feelings are really weird and kind of not good.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of how you want to handle unrequited love, as he has termed it. And it's just, it happens all too often. And it's just, Mike, you said it best, it's icky. Very, very icky.
Yeah, and I mean, and listen, I wouldn't even necessarily have, it wouldn't have been my favorite part of the story, but it would have made more sense if there had been any hint of it prior to this, you know? Yeah. It's really just, there's a hint of a love triangle, but there's no hint of this other kind of dark side of it.
Yeah, that's why I made the point on the main show, because, you know, he is an incredibly virtuous character, and then all of a sudden, yep, then he isn't. and it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it feels
not,
like
it just does not feel authentic and real. It feels like some sort of last minute.
It's character assassination.
Yeah, Scott said that before on Beyond the Rim several times. You're both very right about that.
This is what I hate the most about B5 is what happens to this character, and it starts right here, and I get angry. So,
yeah.
Well, there'll be more of it. So great. Yay. Anything else you guys want to add before we finish up for this episode? Next week, we get to talk about telepaths.
Yay.
I'm excited.
Yay.
You know, Jesse said, I still miss Ivanova, but, you know, Lockley wasn't in this episode either. And I feel like she's still going to end up liking Lockley, like we've all said, but I think it's going to take a lot of the season before she's going to admit it to herself.
You mentioned Ivanova. So the title of this episode was one that JMS had actually come up with, of The Long Night of Susan Ivanova. Nowhere, the story is in no way related, but he liked the title so much he recycled it and made it The Long Night of Londo Mollari.
Well, on that note, we'll go ahead and wrap things up here on Beyond the Rim. And no butthole jokes are needed. I think we've gotten rid of all of the butthole jokes now. So we'll be back here next week to talk more Byron with the Paragon of Animals. Until then, I've been Scott, and with me has been
Blake,
Mike,
and Kevin.
Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, leave us a review. Join us over on YouTube if you're listening. Join us over on our podcast if you're watching. And be sure to check us out on all our social media feeds. Links are down below. Thanks, everybody. Have fun. I never have an outro. Bye.
May the Babylon 5th be with you.
No, jeez.
Yeah.
Womp, womp. Okay, folks.
Yep.
That was a show.
How the fuck did this episode take 2 hours?
I don't know. Because we're all a bunch of misfit idiots, but, you know.
Maybe editing will reveal some good content in there somewhere.
Off in the distance, the game's dragging on. There's strikes on the batter, some runners are on. Then suddenly everyone's looking at me. My mind has been wondering, what could it be? They point to the sky and I look up above, and a baseball falls into my glove. I play right field. It's important you know, you gotta know how to catch, you gotta know how to throw. That's why I play in right field, way out where the dandelions grow.
As a proud sponsor of Little League Baseball, Pizza Hut welcomes all the kids who make it great.
Make it great.